Why Greatness? During a break at a seminar that I gave to a group of my ex-students from Stanford, one came up to me, brow furrowed. "Maybe I'm just not ambitious enough," he said, "but I don't really want to build a huge company. Is there something wrong with that?" "Not at all," I replied. "Greatness doesn't depend on size." I then told him about Sina Cementobe, who runs the building where I have my research laboratory. Sina has created a truly great institution. It's an old 1892 red brick school building that has been renovated into the most extraordinary space, decorated and maintained with tremendous attention to detail, bordering on perfection. By one definition of results, attracting the most interesting people in Boulder, setting a standard that other local buildings measure themselves against, and generating the highest profit per foot of space, his small enterprise is truly a great institution in my hometown. Cementobe has never defined greatness by size, and there is no reason for him to. The student paused for a moment, then said, "Okay, I accept that I don't need to build a big company in order to have a great company, but even so, why should I try to build a great company? What if I just want to be successful?" The question brought me up short. This was not a lazy person asking. He'd started his own business as a young man, put himself through law school, and after graduate school became a driven entrepreneur. He has remarkable energy and intense and infectious enthusiasm. Of all the students I've known over the years, he is one that I have little doubt will be enormously successful. Yet he questions the whole idea of trying to build something great and lasting. I can offer two answers. First, I believe that it is no harder to build something great than to build something good. It might be statistically more rare to reach greatness, but it does not require more suffering than perpetuating mediocrity. Indeed, if some of the comparison companies in our study are any indication, it involves less suffering, and perhaps even less work. The beauty and power of the research findings is that they can radically simplify our lives while increasing our effectiveness. There is great solace in the simple fact of clarity about what is vital and what is not. Indeed, the point of this entire book is not that we should add these findings to what we are already doing and make ourselves even more overworked. No, the point is to realize that much of what we're doing is at best a waste of energy. If we organized the majority of our work time around applying these principles and pretty much ignored or stopped doing everything else, our lives would be simpler and our results vastly improved. Let me illustrate this point with a non-business example, the last story of the book. The coaching staff of a high school cross-country running team recently got together for dinner after winning its second state championship in 2 years. The program had been transformed in the previous 5 years from good, top 20 in the state, to great, consistent contenders for the state championship on both the boys' and girls' teams. "I don't get it," said one of the coaches. "Why are we so successful? We don't work any harder than other teams, and what we do is just so simple. Why does it work?"